And this is, of course, The Naked Scientist with Dr. Chris and Dr. Kat. And we're looking at the origins of the universe, what's inside matter, what are atoms made of this week. And we've got two wonderful guests with us. One of them is Ben Alanak. He is a theoretical physicist from the University of Cambridge. And we've also got Christina Lazzaroni. She's in Birmingham University. But let's kick off, first of all, by talking to Ben. So when we're talking about atoms, I think the ancient Greeks, going back sort of Democritus' time, had a concept of the atom as this tiny particle which you link lots of them together and got something. But how do we actually know what's inside them?
100 years ago, Ernest Rutherford, down in the Cavendish Lab here in Cambridge, he fired radioactive particles into atoms. And you can tell from that, you know, roughly speaking, what's going on inside. One in about every 8,000 of these particles came back at him. And he measured those with a Geiger counter. And that led him to completely throw away the model at the time, which was a plum pudding model of, you know, some sort of squishy stuff, which was positive with little electrons dotted around it. What he realised was, actually, most of the atoms is empty space with light electrons flying around the outside. And inside there's a very small, hard, dense core called a nucleus.
It's interesting you say about the empty space, Ben. I've got an email here from Jack Dowd, who says, "Hi, guys, I'm listening to you in Brooklyn, New York, and I like your programme. I've heard there's a huge, vast amount of empty space between the orbiting electrons and the nucleus of an atom, and I've been told that if all the empty space was taken away so that every single electron touched another electron and the nucleus, then the size of the world would theoretically be the size of a melon."
That could actually be true. I'd have to do a calculation on the back of an envelope to be absolutely sure, but it is a huge amount of space and the particles inside are tiny.
But what are the actual particles that make up an atom?
Yeah, so around the outside you have electrons. They're light, negatively charged, electrically charged particles. And inside you have the nucleus, which is made up of protons and neutrons. They're kind of heavier stuff that stick together quite well.
And how big actually are these things?
So an atom is roughly 10 to the minus 10 metres. So that's a tenth of a billionth of a metre across. And the tiny constituents in the middle are kind of almost a million times smaller than that. So they're just unimaginably tiny, really.
And the nucleus is positively charged because it's got the protons
in it.
And the electrons are negatively charged.
That's
now, I can understand why the electrons would be clung onto by the positive core of each atom, the nucleus, but why is it that all those protons with that big positive charge can be stuffed together and they stay there? They don't all fly apart.
There is an additional force keeping them together. That's called the strong nuclear force, which is, they're in there, they're stuck in there with neutrons as well, and this thing kind of just sticks them together, basically.
And so how do we actually work out what the different atoms are? Because if I've got an atom of, say, oxygen, which I'm breathing, how is that different from an atom of, say, the carbon that I'm burning to make the energy in my body?
Yeah, well, you can weigh that. I mean, through indirect means, you can weigh them. And you can work it out through chemical reactions and so on, you know, to work out how many of the different atoms make up, you know, make different substances up.
And delving a bit more deeper into the structure of matter, I mean, you hear about things like quarks and neutrinos and all these kind of things. How do they fit in? And how do we know that they're there?
Well, as far as we know, they're the smallest bits of matter. So if we go deeper into the nucleus, for instance, every proton and neutron is made up of three smaller particles, and they're quarks, actually, and they're stuck together with this strong nuclear force. So by breaking up protons, you can actually detect these things indirectly.
This is where, like, particle accelerators come in.
That's right, yeah. So Rutherford's initial experiments with the radioactive atom are now being done at much higher energies in order to delve deeper and deeper into the proton, for instance.
So tell us a bit more about what you're doing. I sort of understand it as you do the maths that then the particle accelerator people try and work out if it's right or not.
It gets a bit blurred around the edges, and we both do bits of each other's jobs. But that's right, I do a lot of theory, there's a lot of sums. I try and work out models of the early universe to explain facts about the universe that we see today, and then most importantly to work out ways of testing these theories by looking at the data coming out of the experiments.
So this is working out what you should see if you smash two particles together.
If the theory is right, yeah.
But why do you want to smash things together? How does that actually help?
Well, it's the only way, because you can't actually see with a naked eye or even with a microscope, you can't see these particles, they're much too small. So the only way to probe them at all is to have something very high energy that breaks them apart. And you can see what they decay into, for instance. You can get a picture of what happens after those collisions. And that's the only way, really, you have of probing them.
And what's new about the Large Hadron Collider? Because what have we done in the past and how does this differ?
Yeah, so plenty of different collisions have been happening in the past, and basically the energy gets higher and higher and higher every time. And with, you know, through Einstein's equation E=mc², if you've got more energy, you can make heavier particles. So particles that are previously undiscovered, when you pass a certain energy threshold, all of a sudden you'll be able to produce them. And that's what's hoped, particularly for the Higgs boson, which is a hypothetical particle that's, you know, hopes will show up there.
So up until now, people have been slamming things together the same way as they will do in the LHC, but now they're going to be able to do it even more powerfully.
Yeah, basically that's right. I mean, the technology's come on a lot, and you know, that's why they're able now to do such high-energy collisions. But yeah, that's right.
Where's this going to stop? I mean, if we've got this new, exciting, huge particle accelerator, what if you do some sums or find some evidence that means you have to build an even bigger one to get even higher energies? Do you think that the LHC will be the answer to everything?
Not necessarily. You might need to build one more, actually.
An even bigger one.
Yeah, well, it won't necessarily be bigger, but
size
it would
Belgium.
Be straight.
Don't these things consume energy on the scale of a national grid just for this one experiment?
It's not as much as that, actually, but it is a lot of power. I mean, it's, you know, 100 megawatts or so, so, you know, it's a significant amount.
That's about 20% of a reasonable nuclear power station, so that's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of power, you know, and so, you know, you have to weigh up the cost of these things and decide whether the science you're going to get out of them is actually worth the cost. And it was decided, and I think rightly, that for the LHC the answer to that question is yes. And, you know, it'll be that decides whether the next one's built.
Thanks, Ben. That's Ben Alanak. In just a second, we're going to talk to Christina Lazzaroni, and she's going to tell us how we're detecting some of those particles that are produced during these big collisions. And if you have any questions for them, email them, chris@thenakedscientist.com.
Sorting out the sparks from the quarks. The Naked Scientists. For more information, get online at nakedscientists.com.